We're making radio the way we want it to be, and you are welcome to join us, the voice of Sacramento.
FM, KUBU, the voice of Sacramento with Agony Ants, and You're So Vague. That came off the Big Cinnamon album. That one featured the vocals of William Clear, and he's our guest all the way from the San Francisco Bay Area. Bill, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Mike. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. You know, we've played a little bit of your music on the show over the years. That was kind of a neat turn you did there with Alan Clapp on, you know, on vocals there on the Agony Ants album, Big Cinnamon. We're here today to talk about one of your newest ventures. This is a movie. You're now making movies.
Yeah, kind of came out of the blue, but we did. We took about a year to do it, but we just finished, and everything's gone really well with it. I'm really proud of it. I think it's good.
So Deadball the movie, what does Deadball refer to?
Well, it's kind of a reference to the Deadball era. The movie takes place in the 1880s, and you know, home runs were hard to come by in those days. So it was sort of the beginning of the Deadball era, which I think lasted probably until Babe Ruth came along.
Did anything change? I mean, was Babe Ruth way better than the sluggers of the other era, or did they change the actual composition of the ball?
I think the ball did physically change, and they also started using different types of bats. The bats that they were using in the period of time that our movie takes place were usually like 42 inches, so they were really heavy. The balls were like, you know, softer and sort of bulkier. So I think it evolved over the next, you know, 30 years or so, that by the time Babe Ruth and all of them came along, the equipment was different. But I think Babe Ruth was also just a lot better than the guys that had come before him.
That's true. I mean, the game had to evolve and refine, and, you know, people got better. There's this whole history behind them. So for my British friends, we're talking about cricket, but the American version of it. baseball. I mean, it's ideal to have you on the show right now because Say is the second day of spring. Our favorite teams are in spring training right now in both Arizona and Florida. We're on the verge of baseball, so no finer time to talk about it. What possessed you to make a movie about this?
It was very out of the blue. My friend Bobby Chastain, who was actually in the movie as Cannonball Crane, he sent me out of nowhere this long series of text messages telling me the story about the guy who had the single season home run record before Babe Ruth and telling me all the crazy things that happened to him and some of the people he played with. And I honestly thought he had just made it up. Because I felt like I knew baseball history, but I had no idea about any of this. So I did some research on it, and it was such a crazy story that I was telling the corner laughers, basically all of Carla and Coy and Charlie and Casey and all of our friends about it. And it was actually Carla Kane who said, "You should make a movie of that."
Wow.
And so I did. We did.
Now, had you ever made movies before? This seems really out of the blue.
I've made a couple many, many years ago. They were more of just sort of improvisational, you know, let's get together and write out a skeleton plot and just have fun with it. This one was a lot more structured, but so I have some experience in it, but it's been a long time.
Okay. Well, it came out really well, and this is, I guess you wouldn't call it a full length. It's about 51, 52 minutes, but it's just it's kind of a nice thing to watch at home. I saw it, really enjoyed it. Saw it on YouTube. Is Cannonball Crane the slugger that we're talking about?
Cannonball Crane was a pitcher. Ned Williamson was the home run, quote unquote home run king of the time. And he's played by Charlie Crabtree.
Yeah. And, he's just a natural. I mean, if you told me who of the mystery lawn musicians would be your slugger, I would have guessed Charlie instantly, too.
Exactly. Right. Thank you. Yeah, it was good. It was good casting. Everyone fit into their parts so well. I mean, Casey Bowman, if you put a blonde mustache on him and have his hair a certain way, he actually really kind of looks like the character he plays, Cap Anson. So yes. Everybody fit really well.
And, I got to say, I love the choice use of mustaches in that movie. It was the 1880s. Everybody had facial hair. I mean, we had presidents with beards and, baseball players with mustaches and chewing tobacco and spitting and all that stuff.
Yeah, we're actually probably short on mustaches in the movie because pretty much everyone did have one. But we picked like sort of the people who had the best mustaches and went with those so that we didn't, we want it to look too comical with the mustaches, but if you look at the pictures of those guys, it is pretty comical because they all had these lavish mustaches and beards. It's pretty funny.
It is pretty funny. I don't talk politics much online, but somebody posted something saying, "Who was your favorite president?" So just on a goof, I said, obviously Chester Arthur. He's from the 1880s and he had the mutton chops that, everybody would, wishes they could grow. So, I'm a big fan of that era just for the hair, the facial hairstyles.
Oh, absolutely. Men's hairstyle has never been better.
Absolutely. So, it was kind of fun to see some of my musical heroes acting. You did a great job. The Four Corner Laughers did a great job. Really impressed with Coy. He's kind of the quiet-ish member of the band, of both bands that he's in. I guess all the bands he's in. But, he just really did a good job.
He's so good. I think he's probably the standout performance in that movie because he plays this... The character he plays was really like an odd guy, and Coy just presents this sort of he has this accent and his facial expressions and the way he goes about playing that character. It's just it's perfection. I love it, and everyone's response has been the same, that they're really impressed with what he did, and it's great.
Very, very cool. Now, where did you film the movie?
We filmed it in a few different places in the South Bay. There's a place called History Park in San Jose, which is sort of, if you go there, it almost looks like a period piece back lot. It's got all these little houses and it's kind of sectioned off from things. And then couple other places in Sunnyvale where they have old historic buildings. And then we did a lot of other parts in front of green screens, you know, in order to make like there's a scene in front of the pyramids. And so we use green screen for some of that.
That's right. That's right. I guess that doesn't necessarily exist in the San Francisco Bay Area. Pretty impressive stuff. Now, what was the single season record for home runs in that day?
It was, he hit 27.
Okay.
And the thing about it was that the fence that he hit, the fence was 180 feet. So he was hitting home runs about half the distance of a home run today. But they had actually, that fence in prior years, if you would hit it over that fence, it was a ground rule double. But then they decided this one year, let's try and see if we can get a bunch of home runs. So they decided it would be a home run if it went over the fence. So, you know, he hit 27, which by today's standards, I mean, if you think of a guy hitting a ball 180 feet, there'd some, you know, people would have 200 home runs.
That's true.
But in that era, you know, that's just the way it was. So that record stood until Babe Ruth came along.
That's fascinating. I had not realized that the fences were like half the distance that they are now. So that was really something. The ball really must have been truly hard to hit or really dead in those days then.
Definitely. And, you know, in most of the parks, the way they were configured, they weren't, you know, built specifically for baseball. So most of the home runs were like inside the park home runs. You know, the ball just had to keep rolling. And, you know, that's how people got home runs. But, yeah, so that particular park was one of the first to have fences. And one of the things I thought was really interesting was that back in that day, Ned Williamson hitting all those home runs over that short fence kind of made it so that people didn't really have a lot of regard for his record, which kind of parallels, you know, what today with Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire is that there's like, yeah, he's the home run king, but ... You know, there were these circumstances that helped him out. And I thought that was really interesting.
That is interesting. Yeah, there was always an asterisk. I mean, although you could not have an asterisk with Babe Ruth hitting them twice as far and hitting 714 of them. Obviously, no asterisk with Babe Ruth. But that era was something else. That's the infant era of baseball. Did fans go out and see games in large numbers in those days?
It was becoming really popular around then. There was the National League and then the American Association. I don't remember how many teams the National League had. It was under 10. But over the sort of the time period that our movie takes place in, it really started to pick up in popularity.
Interesting. Yeah. And, you know, when you think of the good old days, even though we don't know much about it, and I really didn't know any names from that era, you know, maybe Abner Doubleday, I guess, but I don't even know when he was alive. But you think of that era, but you don't know much about it. So I think you're kind of bringing something to light to a lot of us baseball fans that really hadn't known much about the era.
That's what I hope. You know, that's kind of what my hope is for the movie, is that, you know, people who find out about it, who are into baseball, can check it out and learn some things that they didn't know, because I didn't know any of this. I the only thing that really touches on it is Ken Burns' baseball documentary.
Yeah.
But not in great depth. It's not talked about a whole lot. So when I was researching all of this and all these crazy, you know, personalities that were playing the game back then, I was surprised that not more had been written about it. There's a couple of books that touch on it as well. But for the most part, it's just not something that's been put out there for baseball fans to take a look at.
No, that's cool. I'm glad that you're starting with this. It is a part of our history. It's the national pastime. We like to say that. Have you ever gone out to ballparks in other cities? I know some people like to go out to other towns and just see as many ballparks as possible, catch games.
I've seen most of the ballparks in California. And I've gone down to spring training in Arizona, so I've seen, you know, the spring training stadiums and the minor league stadiums down there. I haven't been to nearly as many ballparks as I'd like to, so they're still on the bucket list. But I love the game. I love seeing it, you know, really anywhere, anytime a bunch of guys are going to mix it up with a bat and a ball, you know, I'll be there.
Absolutely. And, you know, what's kind of interesting is there's a whole – revival of old style stadiums now. I mean, you go to some place like Camden Yards in Baltimore or even AT&T Park in San Francisco, and they're not like the stadiums of the era that we grew up in. You know, and I'm assuming 70s, 80s, 90s. I mean, they really look like old time stadiums.
Yeah, and I love that they've done that, because, you know, like in this movie with the weird fence, every park had its own quirks and its own personality, its own configuration. And I like that they've gone back to that kind of thing where every ballpark sort of has its own personality rather than the, you know, the old Three Rivers riverfront, just like, you know, a little bowl. Yes. Everything's exactly the same. So I think it's great.
Yeah, very, very cool indeed. I'm an A's fan. I go to see games in Oakland occasionally, and I've got to say it's kind of weird there. It's like watching a baseball game in a football stadium. When they put Mount Davis in, those big center field stands, that was not a baseball move.
No. It's to me, it's still a shame about that, because, you know, before that was there and you could look out and you had all the ice plant and everything. I mean, it was a cool stadium.
Yeah.
And, you know, I will go out there maybe once a year and you know, check out the A's, but yeah, it still bugs me that Mount Davis, it's an atrocity.
It is. I mean, as opposed to across the bay, literally across the bridge, AT&T Park, that's a baseball palace. That was designed exactly for baseball.
Indeed. I love it. And I loved Candlestick just because that's what I grew up with.
Yeah.
But AT&T Park's awesome. But I hope the A's can get, you know, I'm a Giants fan all the way, but I support the A's being able to move to San Jose, because I think it's good for the Bay Area. It's good for baseball. And, you know, I'd love to see them out of that ballpark and see another cool park in the game.
I hear you. Another cool place to go see baseball. I'm chatting with William Clear of William Clear and the Marvelous Fellows, and also of Deadball, the movie. We're almost at the end of our time here, Bill. Where can my listeners watch the movie Deadball, the movie?
You can go to thedeadballmovie.com. It's available there for streaming and download. And you can also, it's also on Amazon Instant Video. So if you're on an Xbox or a, you know, computer or whatever, you can also check it out there.
Great. And to continue the contact information, you are also probably more well known as being a musician. Where can my listeners find out more about your music and hear some of your music?
The best place for that would be our Facebook page, probably, because everything, you know, that we do outside of there, we put into the Facebook page. So that's facebook.com/WCFellas.
WC Fellas. Okay. William Clear Fellas. Okay. Very good. I've been chatting with William Clear. Bill, thank you so much for spending some time with us here on Twirl Radio today.
Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate you you play in our music all the time. It's awesome.
My pleasure. Thank you. And I want to do more of that. Why don't we play one of your songs right now? You sent me one. Why don't you go ahead and introduce it?
Yeah. This song is, it's called Good Night Moon. It's about my brother Ryan who passed away a while back.
I'm sorry.
It's just sort of a, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it's a celebration of his life and, you know, the lives that he touched when he was here.
Very good. William Clear and the Marvelous Fellows and Good Night Moon. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks so much.
Hey, Bill.
When I look ahead and I look along, take miracles from now on. When I take a chance, I'll live with the price. I don't consider faith a sacrifice. He lived in his youth, he stayed there for good. He did everything that he possibly could. And then he said, good night, moon. You're a far cry from being blue. He said with a smile to you, why don't you wait until the sun shines through? And then he said, good night, moon. the chance to discover our faith. We're not here to bury what gets better with age. If not for our sorrow, if not for our death, at least for the fact that we're doing our best. When faced with the future, we'll all take the chance and take a little wisdom whenever we can. And then he said, good night, moon. You're a far cry from being blue. He said with a smile, forever I wait to see him standing at the front of the gate. I'll hear him say, good night, moon. You're a far cry from being blue. He said with a smile to you, why don't you wait until the sun shines through? And then he said, good